Hey kids, do you like wrestling? Well, we like wrestling too. We are Shake Them Ropes here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Myself and Chris Novembrino kind of doing a lazy river of wrestling criticism, going through the news and whatever happened in stateside television wrestling. And also, you know what? Sometimes we just like to watch old stuff and talk about that too. Love for you to give us a listen if you haven't already. We are Shake Them Ropes here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey guys, Jeff Hawkins here. Wanted to let you know that if you like what we do here on Shake Them Ropes, please, 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 please show us some love. Click that link in the description for Red Circle and throw a buck or two in the tip jar. We'd really appreciate it. And now, Shake Them Ropes.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Hey kids, do you like professional wrestling? Well, we like professional wrestling too. This is Shake Them Ropes. I am Jeff Hawkins. He is Chris Novembrino. If you don't know the deal, basically, I live on Twitter. Chris could care less.
Yeah, well, but I do take naps in my Lucha of the Hidden Temple shirt.
You mean Legends of the Lucha Temple?
Yeah, okay, so the story behind this shirt is that someone basically stole, like, the Lucha.
The branding?
Of the, yes, stole the Lucha of the Hidden Temple thing from me, like, 10 years ago. And when they were kind of caught on it, they did actually send me a shirt, which is fine.
I think, is it
I don't make that much money.
Well, no, but I'm thinking Friday or it's either tonight, tomorrow, or Sunday. I can't remember what it is. I think it's this weekend. Penta and Rey Fénix are doing a show in the old... in the old soundstage at the old temple for Lucha Underground.
Nice, nice.
And a lot of the alum, like Brian Cage, John Morrison, all those other types are doing the show as well. So,
I mean, you could always reboot Lucha Underground whenever, because really all you need is Dario Cueto. You could have a completely new cast of wrestlers and a completely new storyline. So long as you have Dario, you still have a
he
story.
He might be under contract with MLW still. Because he's been doing work for them, so I don't know if he can. If you may, you get a new, you get the son of Cueto.
Well, yeah, but I really think, you know, people have always asked me would they ever bring back Lucha Underground. I'm like, no, But if they did, you really only need Dario in order to relaunch it. It's not like Prince Puma was this like character that we were all super emotionally attached to. They really kind of were working through Ricochet's work back in that era. And, you know, Pentagon would be, I think, an important character to have back. But other than that, we basically get away with whoever.
Chris, I'm going to ask a question that's going to rile about half of our fan base, and I'm fine with this. Has AEW become a lazy company? And I don't mean the guys, and I don't mean the wrestling in and of itself. I mean the company as a whole in terms of, quote-unquote, the wrestling war and what it takes to get more fans and get your name back out there in the zeitgeist. And let me state my case here, because I'm saying I think it is. Been watching a lot of the hype for Backlash. And WWE right now, in addition to having a fairly hot product, is doing what I like to call the retail politics of marketing and other things. They're sending their guys out there doing blasts. They're doing movie crossovers to advertise The Fall Guy and Boy Kills World and a bunch of other things. They had this big, almost UFC style, fan rally with all the talent going into Backlash and before SmackDown today. And don't get me wrong, this is a completely cynical push to get Vince McMahon off the pages and to kind of we are the family company. But AEW used to be really good at this kind of stuff. They were the populist choice. They were the ones doing meet and greets and heels. And, you know, hey, we've lowered our ticket prices so the basic person can come and watch a show like it used to be. And now, instead of doing blockbusters, 122,000 for Dynasty, they are now the critical art house darlings, you know, playing for the critics almost. They have virtually done no meet and greets since I think last year at Double or Nothing, or even whatever the one MJF no-showed to.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember what the name of that pay-per-view was.
That was Double or Nothing. That was Vegas. That was the Vegas pay-per-view.
That was the Vegas one.
When he came out and basically got killed by Wardlow. Like, that's a couple years ago, though. That's 2 years ago as opposed to last year, I think. It was 2022. Yeah, it was Double or Nothing 2022, so it would have been 2 years ago. Okay.
That's right, yeah. And that culminated in Wardlow winning the world championship in 23.
But, I mean, Tony does all the PR. I mean, and don't get me wrong, Tony in a styrofoam neck brace. We'll talk about that in a little bit, but the Young Bucks or Kenny Omega are not sent out there. It's Chris Jericho sometimes, who's good, but you know he's so swarmy when he does these types of things. You know, or they end up sending people like Mark Briscoe, who's wacky and I love him. Or my favorite is I watched Eddie Kingston do one of these local media type things, and he's like, I don't even know why I'm here. I'm like, dude, you got to play the game. You got to play the game. And I think as a company, there's a lot of guys in this company who don't know the game. And the guys who know the game don't want to do the game because they don't want the grind. And that, to me, is what Triple H meant by the grind, as opposed to calling Will Ospreay, you know, a bad wrestler or whatever. WWE is on. It is a publicity machine nonstop. And I just think AEW has kind of resigned itself to, hey, we're on TV, we're getting good ratings, and we have great wrestling. I've talked enough. I will let you answer any deficiencies in my argument there.
I mean, I think the downward trend in the numbers sort of speaks for themselves here, that whether you like the AEW formula right now or you don't care for the AEW formula right now, is sort of irrelevant to the broader question of, does the AEW formula seem to be in any meaningful way by the numbers turning the trend around and starting to generate a new fandom? I'm not seeing that. And so then I have to assess the week-to-week product that I'm watching and ask myself, do I think Tony Khan inserting himself into the major storyline of the company, him becoming a regular on-screen character and the renewed focus of the Bucks and Omega as the personalities of this company, meanwhile relegating your world champion to opening the show yet again for the second week in a row, do I think that this is a formula that is going to draw a lot of buzz? And I don't. I think the people who are happy with what AEW is doing right now will continue to be happy. And I don't begrudge them for being happy. Enjoy what you like. But I don't think that this formula is going to result in a whole lot of new buzz. I don't think Tony Khan is anywhere near as compelling as an on-screen figure as Vince McMahon was in his peak. I have never cared for the extended stay of the Mr. McMahon character for like 15 years, but it's hard to argue that the Mr. McMahon character in the mid to late 90s wasn't an effective heel character and an effective narrative device. But I'm not seeing that with Tony Khan and this main angle. So I do think they become lazy. I think that at long last, 4 years, 5 years after founding the company, what is the narrative focus of this company? Matt and Nick Jackson, Kenny Omega, whose career it hangs very much in question, and the longevity of his career hangs in question, and now Tony Khan. I don't think that that's a
and the
sterling...
And the slogan, we have good wrestling.
Yeah, at 4 years in, we have circled back to the guys that we founded the company with, in part because at this late date, the four pillars, Orange Cassidy, MJF, Jack Perry, and whoever the
Sammy.
Other guy, Sammy, yeah, right. None of them ever stood up anything.
Wow. And I think Orange Cassidy might have. I think Jack Perry has a chance on this run. Possibly,
they could have done it with Orange Cassidy. Yes. I'm not saying, and I think I went from someone who is down on Cassidy to someone who has been won over. But they had a great opportunity to start making him a pillar that you actually lean stuff against when Jericho bloodied him up. They didn't even kind of go with that. They've had a number of times to kind of get him heated up for world championship consideration. And what's he doing now? He's back to feuding with Trent Beretta. Orange Cassidy should be above and beyond this. And I think that that's, not great. Jack Perry, it has been fits and starts. I think he's improved as a wrestler. I don't think he's a pillar as in like a guy I expect hashtag great matches from yet. I think he's a guy who will have great matches, but I don't expect them. MJF, we did the run. It was what it was. It happened. It's over. And then Sammy Guevara, did that ever stand up to be much? Of, yeah, right. I mean,
I actually think they imported four new pillars. Jericho, Bryan Danielson, CM Punk, and if you want to call him that, Adam Copeland.
Yes.
So it's one of those things, and now they're going to try it with Ospreay, maybe Okada.
Ospreay, Okada, yeah.
We'll see, but yeah, it's one of those things where it's like we keep on putting in new pillars, and we'll see how that goes. We'll talk. Any other points before I move on?
No, I think all of these things sort of sum together to be a company that, if not, complacent might not be the right word, because I actually view them as very much being reactive. So I wouldn't say that they're complacent. If anything, they're too gotten to at times.
I'll get to that in a moment, because that'll be after our first.
But the knee-jerk reactions, yes. And what we are seeing now 4 years on is the fruits of getting Bryan Danielson, turning him heel, turning him babyface, turning him heel, getting Jon Moxley, turning him face, turning him heel, turning him
Bryan Danielson's not out there doing pub either. He's out there because this is his vacation from being a guy in WWE, which has to drive some people in that company mad. It's like, we could be a much bigger company if you'd go, well, I don't want to do that. I just want to come in and do my dream matches and that'll be okay. And you're like, okay, but you know, what about the rest of us?
But then it also circles back to the owners and the executives who view themselves as being more suited to being the face of this company. And I think, you know, to give them a little bit
of the
Bucks. Right, the Bucks have actually improved a little bit charismatically, but it's not enough to justify never mobilizing Brian Danielson or Adam Copeland or the people who have built-in PR and support, especially at Danielson.
Yeah. Now, speaking of the other neighborhood, John Laurinaitis, who would have been a key figure in the Janelle Grant lawsuit against Vince McMahon, has seemingly flipped to siding with McMahon based on a statement from lawyer Edward M. Brennan on May 2nd. Quote, John Laurinaitis has filed a motion today, fully joining in and adopting Vince McMahon's motion to compel arbitration. Mr. Laurinaitis corroborates Mr. McMahon in publicly declaring that Ms. Grant's allegations of sexual abuse and coercion in her complaint are completely unfounded. My client will fight these false allegations together with Mr. McMahon in the proper forum, arbitration. Previously, Brennan released statements that backed up Grant's side, but claiming he, like Grant, was the victim of McMahon. Quote, Mr. Laurinaitis denies the allegations in the misguided complaint and will be vigorously defending these charges in court, not the media. Laurinaitis' lawyer, Edward Brennan, told Vice News in February. Quote, like the plaintiff, Mr. Laurinaitis is a victim in this case, not a predator. The truth will come out, unquote. Brennan had previously called the Grant complaint well-written, but that Laurinaitis was coerced into the situation by McMahon, just like Grant was. John Laurinaitis is a gutless simp. But let me state this. I don't think anybody didn't know this was coming because of the nature of the NDAs in the employment agreements. I think maybe a legal ploy to get John Laurinaitis to get some intel on the Grant side. I hope the Grant attorneys were savvy enough not to give them anything other than what's basic discovery and what their right is, as opposed to strategy. But it appears these guys are going to try and get in there, going to try to get to arbitration, let the arbitrators do whatever. None of this stuff gets out to the media. All testimony is sealed. And then it's like, well, they found it for the plaintiff or they found it for the defendants. And we just go on our merry way, but nobody can reveal anything about what was true and what wasn't.
Mm. I mean, you got to really feel for John Laurinaitis in this situation. On the one hand.
No, you did not just do this to me. What?
Jeff, hold on. On the one hand, he's guilty as hell. But on the other hand, that sucks and he doesn't want to be. So what's he supposed to do here?
I can't go down this rabbit hole with you. Yeah, but I'm of the opinion that there might actually, you know, because I've read the complaint again about the signing of the NDA, and that is really. That is the part where you, I mean, look, not that the sexual stuff wasn't horrible.
I mean, the argument that he was making when he was, quote unquote, on the Grant side was, oh, yeah, no, I did the sexual assault thing, but I was being forced to.
Vince made me out of three.
Vince made me. I didn't want to do that.
But looking at Janelle Grant's complaint, there's a lot of language in there about when they were negotiating the NDA and Like Vince would have, they had these artificial deadlines put in there by his lawyers to try and get that going. He refused to negotiate on certain clauses and stuff to the point where even when the NDA was completed, Janelle Grant was the only one who signed it, which I thought might make it a unilateral NDA, and they might have done that, but I don't know. I was told that wouldn't have been the case here, but. The thing is, it says that everything, the clause in there says that all disputes and any questions or concerns about the nature of the NDA have to be solved through arbitration. So my question is, and I'm not a practicing attorney. I just worked in law for a long time and I didn't have time to reach out to anybody about this. So if somebody in the audience can tell me this, I'd love to know. because they agreed to lawsuits, or because they decided to bring the lawsuit, and the lawsuit was a violation of the NDA, even if the lawsuit is about the NDA itself and whether it's legal, would the process of bringing in the NDA and not going to arbitration to ask whether or not they could bring this lawsuit, does that violate the terms of the NDA? Because I could see some procedural monkeying around here, and then they just throw this out. Because arbitration, for those of you who have never dealt with arbitrators or a deposition or anything to that effect, it's different than a trial. It's far, number one, the arbitrators are usually selected by the person who wrote the NDA.
Yeah, right.
Which already has my antenna up. But there's not
to call your own foul league, essentially.
Yeah, a little bit. But arbitrators aren't juries. They're not swayed by emotion. It's like, here are the facts of the case. It's a little colder. Yeah, it can get heated. Yeah, it can get, you know, crying and stuff like that. But Janelle Grant has a law degree. And emotional about the case or not, she signed the deal. And then she contacted Vince afterwards, and I also don't think that Vince has to prove that Janelle Grant was the one who leaked the existence of the relationship. I think just the very fact that the relationship was leaked then may give some reasonable doubt that possibly she indirectly may have done it, because she was contacting and talking to Vince after the NDA was signed and after the relationship was over. I don't know. It's depressed me, Chris, because I think there is a chance that an arbitrator is going to look at this and is going to say, you didn't need to sign this. You signed it. You need to be upheld by the nature of this. We don't need to talk about this case anymore. Because right now what they're doing is saying, well, the whole sexual harassment and all that other stuff, which is now, because they're doing this under the Biden law that was passed in 2022 or whatever, it was at the time, it was still a consensual relationship, and see, they were still talking to each other, etc. The whole emotional connection, and look, we're very aware of how much of a scumbag Vince McMahon is and doing all this. But in arbitration, those things, emotion takes kind of a backseat to these types of cases.
Well, yeah, especially if like the sexual assault crimes are not going to be then referred to legal prosecution by the arbiter or anything like that.
Right.
It becomes a real dead end. So I hope very much that this does not end in arbitration.
Yeah, civil cases, in terms of a jury trial, you only have to be 51% sure of the doubt. Arbitration is more like, well, what do the laws say? Who followed what law? What is it's more of a technical thing than making a case, for the most part. Although you are still making a case to an arbitrator. I mean, arbitrators have been there, done that type of person. They're not there to say they're going to say, okay, here's the deal, here's what I think, and then they're out of there. I have become far more despondent that either Laurinaitis or Vince McMahon are going to be found in any way. I mean, they might be found, but it's not going to be, you're not going to get details. They're probably going to be sealed. If it gets so bad that they think they're going to lose, the insurance is going to cover anything, so they will settle. And then that'll be the end of it. My feeling is all of this is going to get put under the rug.
I got to tell you, I kind of feel like that too. I don't want that to be the case, but my gut's increasingly telling me that, like, we'll never know the full details of this, that Vince is going to somehow skate out of this. And once again, a powerful man is going to be able to use money and the law as a cudgel to avoid accountability for something that they clearly did.
And of course, Johnny being a simp is just no surprise to anybody, I don't think. It'll be interesting to see if Vince indemnifies him now that they're aligned.
Mm.
And they now have a joint defense. That's going to be the real question of what was the point of Johnny Ace getting his own attorney
type of a thing, and if it was a kind of a legal, some legal posturing to get Janelle Grant's side to try and tell their lawyer something. That I'm going to be very fascinated by, but for right now I'm just sickened by the whole thing. So let's move on, shall we?
Yeah, let's do it.
We alluded to this earlier. Tony Khan appearing this week on various broadcast outlets covering the draft in a styrofoam neck brace, selling the neck injury from the Young Bucks attack. Kudos to the NFL Network and another net, and I think ESPN, who both had him on, treating wrestling not like derisively or dismissing it or whatever, but in the spirit of the tongue-in-cheekedness. But Tony did have some things to say, including that, quote, he was going against, quote, Harvey Weinstein when referring to the WWE as a company. Don't get me wrong, I didn't like the appearance.
The analogy was even more agonized than that in context. It was like he first started talking about WWE being the Coke and them being the Pepsi, and he's like, now it's like we're the Pepsi of professional wrestling and we're up against the Harvey Weinstein of professional wrestling. And
you and I both, because I had this, I posted this question to you and I had an answer in mind and you nailed it, and I was amazed by our psychic link. I said, okay, if W then what is Tony Khan in terms of wrestling? And your answer was,
he's the Tommy Wiseau of professional wrestling.
Hello, Mark.
Right now, he's making a product that is outkicking its coverage. And it very much has him all over it and does very much reek of a vanity project. And that is even more true now that we've arrived at a power and intrigue like meta storyline about who controls the company. Is it the Young Bucks or Tony Khan?
Who's the heart of AEW?
Yeah.
The answer is Cody Rhodes.
Right. Well, no. And then, like, the kind of most annoying part of this, which I think actually makes it a little bit even more annoying than the Mr. McMahon character, is that right now, the way it's being positioned, essentially it's the Bucks versus Tony and Kenny, with Tony being like one of the good guys, the beating heart of AEW. Like, he's out there fighting for you. And I that actually is more grating than the Mr. McMahon character, which at least initially was like, I'm the world's worst boss, which is fun. You could see the world's worst boss get his ass kicked by like the world's worst employee. And then it got more fart huffing as time went on, and then Mr. McMahon needed to win more often than he needed to lose, and
he belted himself.
Yes, exactly. Like, so I mean, but it was annoying, and that was being done as a heel. Imagine how annoying it would be if Tony Khan and Kenny Omega have a tag match against the Bucks for the fate of the company, and Kenny has to train Tony up so that he can go out there and help fight for this company.
We're getting a training montage. Everybody look out. I should have put this after the Laurinaitis thing, but whatever. My notes are mixed up a bit. But WWE COO Brad Bloom resigned on May 1st. Brad Bloom was WWE executive number 2 in the Janelle Grant filing. I'm just saying.
Look, it's got strong Drew Gulak energy is all I'm saying.
Oh, we'll get to that in a moment, too. Continuing, I don't know if this is news. It's not, might not even be worth commenting on, but Roman Reigns and Paul Heyman, according to reports, both convinced both Vince McMahon and Paul Levesque last year to change the WrestleMania 39 finish to Roman Reigns defeating Cody Rhodes. Here's what I'll say. Not really news. Guy throwing his weight backstage. They found their way to the end, even if everything terrible, even off all the ideas leading up to it was terrible. Because, trust me, Roman Reigns facing Rock at that Mania was a bad idea. They got lucky. There you go. Anything else?
No. I mean, it's not a terrible surprise. It makes, like, look, we all knew that the story should have been finished last year. Triple H's whole speech about this is an unfinished story was completely unconvincing. And all it did was leave a very bad taste in people's mouths coming out of that WrestleMania that, thanks to a very, very strong performance of Dwayne Johnson leading up to that WrestleMania build, I think completely evaporated away. I thought Dwayne was a wonderful foil for both Cody. He's a wonderful foil for Roman. I thought that he slotted in really nicely into all of the interactions that he needed to slot into. And then when they realized that they needed to do this with Cody, Dwayne's pivot was pretty seamless. Like they made the best out of what was kind of an incoherent story.
Correlation is not causation. Just because the WrestleMania 40 landing hit doesn't mean that the WrestleMania 39 ending was a good idea. It was a stupid idea. They should have crowned Cody there, and they would have been better off. But they found a way.
Yeah, no, they got lucky. I completely agree with you on this. They got lucky almost in spite of themselves.
On the rosters and on your television, Rey Fénix returned to AEW, as did, and on NXT, Wesley and Wendy Chu returned this week. In the draft, Dijak, Lyra Valkyria, Kiana James, Blair Davenport, Ilya Dragunov, Carmelo Hayes all called up to the main roster.
I like Wendy Chu.
Oh, she's, I do too.
Yeah, she's good.
Has comedy chops for days. I saw her at an indie show 5 or 6 years ago. And she's much better at this than being a dragon lady.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, no, look, and I like the occasional stupid gimmick, and this is a stupid gimmick, and I'm here
right.
For it.
And her with Thea Hale, like Wendy Chu and Thea Hale doing unrepentantly stupid comedy and stuff.
High energy and low energy. It'll be phenomenal.
Yeah, like there's a number of really fun ways to go with this. Yeah.
Blair Davenport, a bit surprising getting brought up. And also, I think Kiana James, in a way, I thought maybe they'd bring up Fallon Henley instead. But Kiana James has a character.
Yes.
Blair Davenport has indie cred. So she'll be in there mixing it up. But I don't see either getting a big push immediately. Maybe Lyra does in a feud with Becky of some kind. But I'm a little nervous about this class that got brought up in terms of the women.
Yeah, Kiana, tough. She is tough. Yeah, I actually think she could be a sleeper success, but it's not going to happen right away.
Oh, yeah, it's gonna be a slow burner.
She's got to find a character.
She'll
have to have a in-ring kind of shining moment, a match where she really gets herself over, whatever, and people can really see how tough she actually is.
And that'll be a hardcore match of some kind. Yeah. If she can find a way into one of those, and the fear there is if they keep putting her in there, but she, and like, I would possibly even pair her with like a Tiffany Stratton.
Yeah.
On the main roster. And those two can find their way together and whatnot, and possibly feud with this Jade Cargill, Bianca team. And find their way there. I think that would be a good idea.
That would actually, yes, I think a tag team would be good for both of them right now in terms of just, getting a little bit of footing and then putting them up against Bianca and Cargill in a way that protects them and makes sure they're not, like, eating too many losses.
But they're on different brands, so I think
yeah, well, no, but I definitely see what you're saying. But Blair, I just think she's destined for mid-card mediocrity. She's not really an on-screen presence. The work, I think, is still a little sus. But
yeah.
And I don't think she's got a great character either. It's just Dime Store Page, basically.
A little bit, yeah. But she can take a beating. I mean, I'd actually dump. I still like Alba Fire. It's a terrible name. I bring her back as Kaylee Ray and team her and Blair together, and then dump who's your favorite wrestler in that coven?
Okay, you mean the untapped pearl that is Isla Dawn.
Isla Dawn, yes, thank you. Contracts and injury news here. I'm moving on so we don't talk about Isla Dawn. Drew McIntyre officially re-signing with WWE. Seth Rollins also officially re-signing with WWE. timing a little sus as Seth Rollins being announced as re-signing just came out moments after they announced COO Brad Bloom had resigned. Isn't that convenient? I also assume this means Becky will be re-signing with WWE. Scripps announcing that his contract is running out. He'll be a free agent on June 1st and will not be re-signed by NXT. Will be hitting the indie circuit as Sydney Akeem. Ethan Page was removed from the AEW roster page, and it was confirmed his contract has run out. We'll talk about that one. CJ Perry also not on the roster or no longer on the web page. And in terms of injuries, both Will Hobbs needing surgery on his knee and Julia Hart had shoulder surgery this week. And Eric Rowan has reported by Fightful was re-signed by WWE, presumably to join the new Wyatt family or whatever they're going to do with that. Ethan Page, big miss. Big miss by AEW to me. And I have crap loads of respect for Ethan Page because he became a body guy during the pandemic, worked his ass off to get, you know, a little bit shredded there, can talk, did talk. Every time he talked, he was great. The stuff with Dan Lambert and the Men of the Year was fantastic.
I thought his promo against MJF was really good when he had that,
when
like
he did the Canada match. Yeah. I think it's a product of Tony having guys slotted, but he's really just concentrating on the guys at the top, and hoping that other things happen. But like, him and Scorpio Sky in that Darby feud were really great. I thought he could have been like a bad lieutenant type character in any kind of big heel stable, be it the Pinnacle or the Undisputed Kingdom, which needs some personality. Adam Cole ain't doing it. Sorry. But I also think this might be a blessing. I think really when he left TNA/Impact and he was doing the Karate Man gimmick and videos for his own channel and stuff, he really wants to be in the WWE system. And I think he's bigger guy. He's bigger than you think.
Oh, yes. I'd love to see him in NXT. Like him
NXT, he would be fantastic right now.
Right. Trick Williams and Ethan Page would be a wonderful feud.
Because what NXT needs is a throwback to when it was the young guys and a bunch of indie darlings, and we were all fearful that, oh, they're just going to put over their gym rat, you know, NCAA tournament guys over real wrestlers, etc. And what it turned into was a thriving territory of indie wrestlers who were bringing up younger guys after that. And what they need right now, they are heavy on camp character. But Ethan Page can turn on the menace in his character. He's just not just a wacky guy, although he can be wacky, and I think that's probably what they'll make him be. But both he and Sean Spears, I think in some ways, and whoever they decide to bring down from the main roster, serve a purpose in NXT in terms of, we are veteran guys, we'll help guide the guys that you think are stars through.
Yeah, I agree. I think Ethan Page, very much, if they wanted to use him in a more serious role, would work as the serious, business-minded kind of Bobby Roode-like heel, type of character. And him leading a faction with like where he's the head of it, and he has like Spears as his bad lieutenant, and maybe a couple other guys. That would make a lot of sense.
Maybe,
and also
like in the Mud, or you know, one of those teams that, you know, Anofe and Malik Blade, I think would do good work with them.
Right. And yeah, then this gives Trick new people to feud with and a new multi-month kind of program, because I think the plan here is to have Trick be champion for at least a good 6 months.
NXT cuts coming earlier today, most from the Next Gen show that they're doing on Hulu, which hope you all didn't get emotionally invested in any of them, but a few recognizable names here. Drew Gulak being the headliner in the crew, he having the issues with shaking hands.
Look, drawstrings can literally creep up on you from anywhere, from any angle, at any time. I was walking down the street the other day, and I was accosted by three drawstrings.
Yes. Other noticeable news, Valentina Ferraz
cut,
and Trey Bearhill from the whatever they call their
the breakout tournament,
tournament.
Yeah, I mean,
and he was awesome. I thought he was pretty good. I don't know what they didn't see in him, but other names: Daryl Mason, Vlad Pavlenko, Ezekiel Balogun, Kia Saint, who was on Level Up a couple times, Keyshawn LaFleur, and Julian Baldy. But
Valentina Ferraz will be sorely missed because she had intensity, man. I enjoyed watching her work.
She got in a little trouble on social media because she liked a professor saying something anti-trans. I think that kind of sealed her fate.
Whoopsie doopsie.
Yeah. Going to that case.
I got to tell you, I have no sympathy for these sorts of things in the year 2024 when we know what the social media rules are. Yeah. Don't be dumb. Don't be dumb.
Let the company do the social media for you if you have to. Ratings talk. Raw on April 29th draft episode improved on last week with 1,683,000 viewers. SmackDown, lowest numbers of the year on Friday the 26th, but they were going up against the NFL draft and playoffs and other things, but still 2,143,000 viewers. I'll take that as a year-long low compared to the other shows. AEW had a 3-hour block on May 1st. Boy, did it with a doing 704,000 viewers. The Rampage that followed it averaged 431,000. Collision did 621,000 viewers, getting that bump from the NBA playoffs that they did. And hey, they put Swerve on there. Let's see if it carries over. It looks like it didn't on Wednesday. But the Rampage that followed it did 293,000 with a 0.09 in the demo. NXT did 564,000 viewers with a 0.14 in 18 to 49, lowest number the show has done since July 4th. I think people were just kind of petered out of wrestling a little bit, but NXT was also a nothing show too. I mean, these shows this week were kind of nothing for the most part.
The roll into Rampage numbers, this is the first time I've heard them, and I think they're a damning testimony about the enthusiasm level on this product right
now.
It's
the brand, I think. I think everybody knows Rampage
doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. And so, like, I mean, even when you put it side by side with Dynamite, people know it only really matters that I watch these first 2 hours of Dynamite. And if they're anything beyond, like, if they're not, if they have any stamina left, they might pop on Rampage. But, like, we are seeing that even among the AEW faithful, that drops off, that they get burned out, that they don't even care about the B shows. Begging, of course, the question, what is the point of both Rampage and Collision? I think one B show is plenty. I think that this company is just putting too much product out and
an unfocused product.
Unfocused product. That's exactly where I was going next.
Sorry.
You are going to do these 3-hour double blocks to get people ideally introduced into the Rampage brand, then what should be happening during these 6 hours of kind of continuous television, or 3 hours and 3 hours, right, is, especially coming out of Dynasty, a serious narrative push to just set the table of here's what's going on in our A show, here's what's going on in our B show. And oh, by the way, you need to watch the A show, or you need to watch the B show to know what's going on the A show, and we're really going to try to link that up. And instead, what we've had are two meandering episodes of Dynamite that are kind of formatted the exact same way, with a major blow-off-y sort of angle to end both of these shows. Like, this is not a rollover angle. Like, killing Tony Khan on the end of the last show is not a rollover onto Rampage to see what happens next sort of angle. Nigh is the thing that they did this week where you're killing Omega and everything. Like, these are not rollover angles, like, tune in and see what happens on the next segment. They are show-ending, final seg sort of formatted things. So they didn't even go into these three-hour blocks with the Dynamite into Rampage really thinking about what's the lead into Rampage look like. Right now, the lead into the Rampage is a dead-end street. And then you just have to turn onto a completely different street to watch Rampage.
We killed Kenny in his hometown. Who's ready for another hour of fun?
Right. Well, boy, geez, guys, that was freaking crazy. Up next, here they come, the Acclaimed.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Yeah, no, okay. How can anything have emotional resonance if your own product isn't giving it emotional well, you know, show must go on.
Yeah.
Here's Max Caster with some homophobic humor for all of you.
I love Daddy Ass. Taz is all over it. Oh, Daddy Ass is great. He's doing some of the best work of his career. He looks huge. I hope Kenny gets well. All right, up like this.
I hope Kenny gets well. Get well, Jones. Coming.
Oh, Kenny needs a little bit of that old get well, Jones. Isn't that right, Excalibur?
But I digress. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's just a lack of planning right there. That's not all that is. And we will get into, you know, the very few important things in AEW. They're like three to me.
Not many,
but... pay-per-view time. Backlash. WWE doing its world domination thing in Europe with its B pay-per-views. And let me tell you something, watching part of this SmackDown, that crowd is hot for the product because they never come around and they're bringing something somewhat important to them. So they are here for it, man. They are a lively bunch straight out of the territories, and they're singing. And they're doing all these other things, and it's only a 5-match card, so it'll be one of those quick ones, I think, that we'll enjoy and say, hey, yeah, they left us wanting a little bit more.
Yeah.
Plus, comes on, it's tomorrow morning, or by the time you listen to it, it's probably already been on, but 10 a.m. my time, so I'm, you know, wake up, grab a cup of coffee, watch your pay-per-view, get on with your day. Here we go.
Yeah, no, I'll get home from work, and I'll be able to, like, just lay on my bed and just watch the pay-per-view for a couple of hours. That'd be great.
The only downside, not a lot of intrigue to this, so this might be one where it's like, hey, this is a work-rate pay-per-view in some ways. So there you go, guys.
I think it's going to be a work-rate and crowd work sort of show.
Yeah.
So, like, look, if you like a good vibes sort of show where the crowd's really engaged and the wrestlers are really up for performing – This probably will be a very good show for that. If you are looking for this show to be have a lot of like narrative substantive heft,
no,
this is the wrong time in WWE's calendar to be expecting that. You know, if you're waiting for narrative heft to come back around SummerSlam.
Starting with a tag team match, Randy Orton, Kevin Owens versus the Bloodline of Solo Sikoa and Tama Tonga.
I think that's going to be a fun match.
I do too. Have you seen any of Tama yet in SmackDown?
I have not.
Okay. Pretty good. Not doing a lot of talking. He's solos heavy, which is a very interesting dynamic in some ways. As he calls, I forgot what MFT, Mother F and Tonga. Yeah, that kind of stuff. Basically Solo is trying to usurp the head of the table thing, and Paul Heyman tonight told Solo there is only one tribal chief.
Oh,
I have the new. I think this is gonna be a fun. I think Orton's gonna have his walk and brawl boots on, not necessarily his working boots, but his walk and brawl boots.
No, and Kevin Owens and Randy Orton are going to very much go into a character work sort of thing.
Yes.
They're going to be really entertaining.
Yes.
And Orton will definitely lean into that because he realizes now at this stage of his career, I can do stuff like this and it's way easier to do than a suplex. And it can pop crowds almost as much.
But I have Solo and Tama winning this to establish dominance.
I do too. I think they end up pinning Owens, probably.
And what I think is going to be the only title change of the night, although that women's title match I don't know about. I'll try and talk my way through it. But this is the tag match for the WWE Women's Tag Team Championships, the Kabuki Warriors of Sexy Hesher Mom Asuka. It's her outfit right now. Sexy Hesher clown mom, Asuka. I'm sorry. And Kairi Sane taking on Bianca Belair and Jade Cargill. Jade on the biggest stage of her career. This show. A sold-out premium live event. Where she's not probably going to have to do a whole lot. Asuka and Kairi Sane are going to be throwing themselves at these two and just taking wild bumps here and there. I don't see Bianca and Jade in any way losing this match, and it's timed, and it's going to be, what do we have with Jade as an act?
Absolutely. I think we got to get a belt on Jade to make her feel like a prestige character, and a tag belt is actually a very good starting point. No, I think they're winning here. Damage Control's loses.
Triple threat for the WWE Women's Championship. Your champion, Aunt Pam Bayley, working that crowd, getting the "Hey Bayley, I want to know if you're gonna be my girl" songs at the big thing. Not to be outdone though at this big rah-rah session. Tiffany Stratton has found her confidence in front of these things, and she's doing the little Tiffy time thing, and she is a workman, and Naomi. The third person in here probably to take the pin, unfortunately, for your WWE Women's Championship. I have now talked myself into there is no way in hell they're beating Bayley in Europe.
No.
With all those fans who love her.
No. She's going to win. And I think she'll actually pin Tiffany.
Ooh.
Yeah, I think she will. And then but eventually Tiffany's going to win the belt.
Tiffany's an absolute gimmick though, and she knows her gimmick and she's playing it to the hilt.
Well, yeah, no, she knows exactly the character she needs to work, but we're talking about Kiana James' toughness. I also think Tiffany Stratton's
one of those.
Yeah, she's very tough.
She will forever have my respect, and I said this I think last week for the ladder bump she took at Stand and Deliver where everybody was supposed to catch her and they just let her fall to the ground. I was just like, what? You better get back there and you better punch somebody, girl. I don't care how small Cora Jade and Roxanne Perez are. You catch her. Damian Priest versus Jey Uso for the World Heavyweight Championship. I think it's still going to be a banger.
But I don't see Jey Uso winning.
No way in hell.
No.
I could actually see Solo and Tama coming back in and ruining it again.
I hope not, because the whole point of the Jimmy versus Jey match was that Jey now finally is unfettered. They should never have written themselves into
Jimmy
this
made come back in this dumb thing. Right.
Yeah.
He's been excommunicated, so maybe he comes in and saves his brother.
Oh, maybe.
And we do maybe. That again.
God, I have no idea. They wrote themselves.
We're only in the second inning, Chris. We've actually gone backwards.
They bungled this with Jey Uso. Let's not mince words. I think Uso loses, which completely defeats the entire purpose of finally the chains are off Jey Uso.
Maybe in the Orton Kevin they debuted Jacob Fatu, who is signed from MLW. By the way, another Fatu. Wrestling in, I think, Booker T's promotion or something like that. We're gonna have this whole Bloodline story for another 6 years. I can see.
Oh, yeah, I think so. I think the Bloodline is going to be, whether or not they are the world champion, they will always be an upper card faction that it is now being run through, because you can essentially just have Paul Heyman interchange with any of these Samoans, and it's very much consistent with the Wild Samoans era and everything.
And in the main event, Cody Rhodes versus Muscle Hamster now, AJ Styles. A lot of fun at this rah-rah rally. They were alluding to the Bullet Club connection, as both were former leaders, and they mentioned Bullet Club and all that other stuff, and AJ Styles, of course, smacking Cody on TV tonight. I think they went back to that same thing. I didn't get to watch that part. This is going to be to try and get a little bit of buzz away from the AEW fan base who's going gaga over Ospreay. These two are going to try that. I don't know if they're going to get there. But this is going to be, God bless AJ Styles, better living through chemistry right now, looking jack stacked and racked right there. But and Cody, and this is going to be Cody doing Cody melodrama in a way as well. No, he does very good melodrama, but this is going to be an attempt to tell a story with a little bit of work rate and get some of the critical feeling back into the WWE universe away from AEW.
Yeah, the story is the part that I think they kind of still struggled with a little bit here. I don't believe that Styles has a chance to win this championship as like a, you know, reader, so to say. And I don't understand what the in-match story would be. I think it's, if they get kind of sucked into the story thing too much, it's going to get too clever by half. Even if, I mean, like, what's the story going to be? Like, Gallows and Anderson come back up from NXT and reunite with AJ Styles to make the Bullet Club Mach 2? I'm not excited for that. I don't want that.
Well, I think
guys just have, like, a match.
I think they tease it, but that because they broke off AJ Styles away from the OC, I think they may just, you know, be there to be baby faces as opposed to helping AJ.
Interesting. I don't know. I just, if you're going to tell a story, you need to have a story to tell. And I don't really see a story with AJ and Cody so much. I see two guys who are capable of having a very good match. And I hope they focus on that more than trying to tell a story.
I mean, if you wanted to do something wacky and off the wall, let's have in the past week or two figured out a way to repackage Giovanni Vinci and do something, because he's not gonna. He is gonna be floundering if he doesn't get a new gimmick soon. So I mean,
Dude, that guy's gonna need a character injection bad. Giovanni Vinci, has never really had a serious character. I mean, the model thing was not a serious character.
Okay.
Yeah.
I thought you meant a character worth something as opposed to a serious character. Yeah, he's never been a killer. He's always been kind of a stooge.
Yeah, so I don't know. The move would be to have Vinci kind of get on, like, that Cesaro work rate push and have him be the guy coming out and having, like, banger matches in the first half.
Almost like the Buddy Murphy, Mustafa Ali type of push. I mean, it's going to need a groundswell to get there.
He needs to be the first hour hero for several weeks here. I think he can get there, and I think he's a good enough worker that if he starts showing off his showier offense, some more of the power stuff that he can do, but also some more of the high-flying stuff he can do in either admirable defeats or a hard-won, like, win, I think he can win the crowd over, but it's going to probably have to happen in the ring and then be buttressed with a character injection.
Yeah, you know who he could be? He could be, and I'm not making an apples-to-apples comparison in any way, but he could be their pack.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah, yeah.
You know, Jack dude who can also fly, but he also has a little bit more power moves in him. That'll do it for the preview of Backlash Now, the lazy river of wrestling criticism. Whatever we watched, whatever we got around to. I think we've handled most of the main roster, unless he has another note here. So, Chris, I will let you select first what you would like to talk about.
I mean, I guess we're going over to Dynamite. This show begins with Swerve Strickland coming out again with Prince Nana in the opening seg. And we have the Bucks insert themselves into the opening seg, giving us a tease that it might be Swerve Strickland versus Kenny Omega. But instead, no, it's Swerve Strickland versus Christian Cage, which is a very strange move for AEW, because for AEW fans, Christian is a divisive figure in terms of his work. I like his work. I think everything he does is meaningful, and that he does actually pepper in a lot of, you know, solid high spots into his work and everything like that. But there are people who don't care for the pacing of a Christian style match. So I think it's a very interesting first opponent for Swerve Strickland to get him in the ring with a guy who's not necessarily going to madly connect with the audiences on a work level. And then we get to the actual kind of opening segment here, and now we've circled back to Christian Cage is attacking Swerve Strickland because Swerve Strickland's a bad guy. He broke into Nick Wayne's house.
Yes.
I mean, obviously it's a heel saying it or whatever, but Christian's actually right here.
Yes, he's the heel with the point.
Yeah.
And
And it's not as though Swerve Strickland's ever said anything to express regret for this stuff. It's essentially the MJF, all my stuff as a heel, I'm your scumbag. It doesn't matter. You have no need for consistency. You just love me.
I hadn't thought of that, but you're exactly correct. Christian needed to be built into a number one contender. That's the other issue with this thing. No, this is a major, this is one of your quote unquote big four pay-per-views. This isn't going to sell tickets unless Christian can sell this with his mouth. And I love Christian promos.
And you got to believe that he's going to win this title somehow.
Yeah, that, like, and I yeah. don't. I don't in any ways.
Not in a way.
Mr. We do rankings here. Christian isn't in the rankings for a title shot. He didn't win any matches. There was no build after his big loss of the TNT title. We didn't give him a couple matches and put him on there and say, I have a plan to get into the title fun or whatever.
They actually just said, here's a surprise. You're fighting Christian Cage.
Yes, it's all giving the heat to the Bucks for making for letting Christian skip the line, even though they didn't mention that either. They didn't put any care into the thought of why does Christian make sense here and how can we make it make sense as we being assholes and doing this. They basically did it for the, we want to swerve the crowd on the Canadian legend coming back, and it's not Kenny. Look at us. Ha ha ha. It was that wink and nod.
It was literally it was an entire angle for that one line in that one moment, which yes. I don't think anyone's going to remember 3 months from now.
And
Mama, do you remember the time you thought that Kenny Omega was going to come out, but then instead it was, I mean, never mind the fact that the initial premise here of Kenny Omega versus Swerve Strickland would, I think, have left a lot of fans rather confused who they'd want to win that match.
Yes.
Other than, well, I just hope both guys have fun.
Yeah. And the promo that Swerve cut during Rampage, I think did nothing for this, because he went back into evil laugh. Swerve is what I'll call it, as opposed to baby face. And he says he's bringing help next week. I assume it's going to be Keith Lee or Darby, as opposed to, say, the logical conclusion, which would be the Gates of Agony, who are in your stable. But then he gave this that you know, the grin with the grill and the evil laugh. And I was like, no, he is your, right now he's just Swerve with a title. He's not a champion. And that's what's scary to me here. And I know, again, I said we were going to wait a week. I'll wait another week here to see if they can rectify this ship. But this is, in very many ways, a parallel to giving Bryan Danielson the title and putting him in there with Kane as his first feud. Even though Christian has a much better work rate and can talk a lot better, this is a well, we're putting him in with somebody who we know can't beat him. So we'll just let him get a win here.
Yeah, and the Kane's a good example too, or actually a very good comparison, because Kane was not actually credible because he was Kane. Kane was
corporate Kane.
Yes, exactly. He was out there as an adjunct of the authority, which is exactly what Christian Cage is. He's out there as an adjunct of the Young Bucks, who have essentially inserted themselves into the world's title picture. And I kind of share your sentiment of, Swerve is just Swerve holding a world title. He is not a champion. The gold grilled toothy evil grin thing, I mean, I get that the point is that it's supposed to be unsettling, but like, imagine a child wearing that t-shirt.
My babyface champion, who I just crowned a big babyface with crowd interaction, to be unsettling necessarily?
Right. I think that he throws off weird, indecisive energy constantly as a champion. It's like, I love you guys. Also, I'm an evil bastard. Also, I have this guy, Prince Nana, who's kind of a goof, who dances, and he's kind of yuck, but he's also kind of a sleazy dude.
It's a little what they did with Drew McIntyre when he won the title in the Empty Arena Mania, where it's like, we're going to try the different Vince versions of babyface or of champs here. One week he's the sarcastic guy. One week he's the ladies' man guy.
Yeah.
The next he's story time guy. Yeah, that's something. I have a choice of three things I really liked in this week's wrestling, two of which are in AEW, so I'll start with this one. Let's take the FTW championship away from Chris Jericho. get rid of the TBS title and make the hardcore title of AEW the women's division. Because that Willow Sky Blue match blew my damn mind. And so whenever they decide, the ladies, okay, we're going to do a hardcore match, the women, especially the ones that you kind of pigeonhole as the pretty young things, just decide to become frontier martial arts wrestling from like 1993. Barbed wire, tables, tacks, whatever. I howled at this thing because, look, it didn't mean anything. It didn't do a lot to build the story of Willow Nightingale. Don't get me wrong. I'm not gonna go away from that part.
She had a nice promo leading into this, though. I thought she's finding a more serious.
Sky.
Yeah, I think she Willow's finding a more serious character, though, that is like not just saccharine to the point of being obnoxious. Like, and you actually see that the saccharine and the positivity is a shield that hide some pain, and that's a much more interesting character.
And Sky Blue cut a promo that made this all made sense. Hey, we kicked your ass in that street fight before. I want another you know, hardcore match. Okay, here we go. I was fine with this. Your turn.
We'll kick it over to NXT here, but
have one thing on NXT. I got plenty on Dynamite to do, so we can do whatever.
We can talk a little bit about the FTW championship match.
Chris is going to get this. Number one, Chris is going to get this gimmick over, and it's going to drive everybody nuts.
The learning tree thing?
Yes. The Eddie Haskell babyface stuff he's doing?
Yeah. We'll see. We'll see if he actually has a plan for how to utilize Big Bill in a way that makes any sense at all. I also think there'll be Bill fatigue relatively quickly if Big Bill can just come in at the end of any one of these FTW matches and just do a choke slam to somebody. I mean, he might be able to get this over. We'll see. I think he has a relatively short shelf life. I love how Taz's tone around these matches has completely 180'd yet again. Like, guys, think it out. Think about how your character would react to seeing this thing and then stay consistent with it. For the love of God, I'm asking you. I'm begging.
What did you think of the match?
Jericho and Shibata definitely reddened up their chests right fine. I thought that it, you know, was kind of like a quality nostalgic Shibata match. It wasn't the stiff, it wasn't like the best Shibata I've ever seen or anything like that. But I thought for what it was entertaining for a while, but then I was still trying to figure out Jericho's character in ring during this. He's not enough of a chicken shit heel. He like tries to go toe to toe, but like, especially in these matches, if it's just going to end with him hiding behind Big Bill, he should be basically losing his ass off for all of these matches instead of going 60-40.
A couple of quick hits from somebody who does not like AEW but wants an alternative to WWE. And he's not a wrestling Twitter guy. He's a guy in some of my other interests. And he just happened to be watching wrestling. And by the way, my throwaway line to your response was, don't throw a hockey puck in people's faces.
No shit.
That hurts.
God.
even Excalibur's like, he threw he stopped himself from dropping an F-bomb.
No, those are hard as hell.
Oh, yeah. No, they hurt. He hates this treatment of Shibata, not because he likes Shibata, but he's thought that, like, especially talking about the Ospreay and Danielson matches, he's never been built up as a main event guy. He is literally a washed up Japanese wrestler. Taking your main event stars to the limit makes the stars look pedestrian. Is he right on that?
I don't know that it makes the stars look pedestrian, but he really is just dropped in with no context whatsoever.
Yeah.
And the only thing that they've given him in terms of a gimmick is that he's kind of cute when he uses his Google Text Translate.
And this statement, which really kind of rang true for me, I feel the same way about the strong style stuff. I like wrestling that looks real but is actually safe, not wrestling that looks phony but actually hurts.
I agree. I think the charm for me of two guys incoherently standing in front of each other and just blasting each other in the chest with no regard for the mores of combat, as in guard, dodge, evade. Strong style kind of feels like dumb style.
Yes.
Sometimes.
Yes.
Where it's like, me caveman, me hit you. Me hit you, you hit me. And then we caveman.
Two guys with clubs just hit.
Yeah, bonk. I bonk, you bonk. And then he bonks twice, and you're like, no, I get two bonks now. Bonk, bonk. I don't know. It doesn't exude a fighting prowess to me. And that's definitely a thing I felt in this match, is they both reddened up their chest right fine. But did that strong style spot really take the match to the next level, or was just that just the obligatory strong style spot?
Kenny Omega cut the promo of his life. And the unfortunate part is the beatdown was so cheeky and so full of the irony, you know, well, it's just business, Kenny, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, doing the V trigger and stuff like that. If the Bucks had come out and just basically said, I hate you, Kenny, and done a 1980s, you know, Southern Territory style kick punch, stomp on the stomach a few times things, and that had ended the show, not just ended the show to go to Rampage, I think we would have a lot more dramatic hold on an audience here about
also
that.
Cut to commercial and have the re-rack happen during the first seg of Rampage, by
yes,
the way.
If we're gonna do a Rampage thing, sure. But I'm just talking to plan that kind of beat down. I mean, make it the end
no,
of the
no,
show.
No, I agree with you that Kenny's promo was great. The crowd was really attached. They did it at the right place. So like he really came off like a star during that promo. And then once again, yes, the Bucks come out and it's just this, oh, are we really, I'm kind of over it. Cause it's like, you know, guys, the mask is off. No one actually believes you guys are, you've gone too far already as characters to the point where it beggars belief from any of the other characters you engage with that they wouldn't see through you.
Don't do wrestling moves in a beatdown unless it's like, unless it is 1985 and you do a pile driver and a guy's out for 3 months by doing a pile driver. Just beat
well,
him
you
up.
Know, you know who does do the signature finishing moves in a beatdown? WWE.
Yes.
Yeah, it's like,
no, you're great point.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Yeah, you do the RKO and then here comes the Rock Bottom and here comes the Stone Cold Stunner and we leave him laying rather than beat the shit out of him.
Yes.
Four guys come in and they just put the, like, because we all know where this is going. Somewhere through, the Bucks should have cut Kenny Omega's mic. They walk down to the ring in silence. No theme song or anything. They're flanked by Jack Perry and Okada. They surround the ring. Kenny knows what's about to go down. And then Jack Perry comes from behind and we start the beatdown.
Yeah.
Like, don't make Kenny look stupid on this either.
Yeah. Your turn, sir.
I mean, that's honestly like those are the big things. Other than that, we
I got a couple other things for AEW.
Well, not necessarily Dynamite. Like,
well, one thing on Dynamite. How about that?
What was it? What's your other thing on Dynamite before we move on?
Serena Deeb as weird babyface, even though she's the heel in the feud against Toni Storm, but playing babyface in this match against Mariah May and doing crowd work. And so I have never seen this Serena Deeb before, and I kind of liked it. Even though it will be absolutely forgotten next week when we start the build against Tony. But she was like hyping up the crowd, doing the clapping stuff. I was kind of amazed by this. And I kind of enjoyed the match too.
All right. Now I'm going to kick it over to NXT here a little bit. I thought the Axiom and Nathan Frazier versus Authors of Pain match, for what it was, which, you know, was a little bit of a fake out of, you know, we're not actually doing a full on match with these two guys,
right,
at this point. I thought it was very well worked in terms of they had a good story going in here. Nathan Frazier and Axiom do such a good job being the little guys to the authors of Pain's big guys, and them running the high tempo offense felt really convincing. Their tempo and their pace was the necessary amount of tempo and pace for me to believe that you'd actually have these two big heel guys on the march, you know, trying to re-rack a little bit.
We're using physics to get them, you know, we'll use momentum and physics to get them off their feet, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, and then when the authors took back over, it was a very good heat section.
Yeah,
I mean, there's nothing, you know, nothing big to write home about on this match. I thought the getting out of it, though, was also clever in the sense that you didn't want to take the belts off of Nathan Frazier and Axiom. And frankly, going into this match, I thought they were going to lose. I really did.
Wow. So,
yeah, just because the authors have typically been handled, you know, protected pretty well on NXT television, and they do kind of want to get this faction going, and getting the belts on the authors wouldn't be a bad way to get this faction going. So I thought they did a good job making me believe that the champions were in peril. And then a clever way of getting the champions out of this mess.
Gotta jump to Collision before we jump back to NXT, because the Grizzled Young Veterans killed it on Collision. They had to go against the Acclaimed, as we said. But that's, I mean, in terms of the right mix of work rate and personality. I know they're on loan from Impact right now, or TNA, or whatever the hell they're calling themselves over there, I think. I thought they should have won this match, to be honest with you. I mean, they were flying all over the place. This was the Grizzled Young Veterans of NXT UK.
Nice.
That we had missed. I mean, they didn't get to do all the mic work they used to do. I was waiting for a nice Zach Gibson promo, you know,
they're
to start
so good.
With. But now James Drake... It was flying in this match, and Bowens could keep up with him. We had a little bit of problems with old Max Caster, but other than that, I mean, it was a strong debut. And if they put them on Dynamite at any point, they're gonna get over on this AEW crowd.
Oh God, yeah, especially just because Zach Gibson's just such a strong personality in a company that does not. Especially with their homegrown characters, does not focus on building strong personalities.
Although social media kind of undercutting a little bit because they were backstage taking photos with the Beaver Boys, Silver and Reynolds, and Drake looks like a miniature version of Reynolds, and Gibson looks like a giant version of John Silver. So they may just go with that. Your turn, sir.
Okay. Kicking it back over to NXT here. You know, I think outside of the one match we sort of spotlighted, the rest of the show is pretty rote. Sean Spears and Ridge Holland.
Yeah.
You know, it didn't go anywhere new. You know, looking at Thea Hale and JC Jane, it felt almost like we'd already finished this story. So
I agree.
I felt like the story was already over. So I was like, oh, okay, we're doing this again. All
and
right.
We've decided to give
Fallon a heel turn.
Fallon a heel turn before he goes. That's fine.
That's fine. I just hate the non-committal initial, like you just attacked your friend and then you get out of the ring and you're like, what have I done? Like
yes.
They're like that. I don't find that to be convincing. The snap is already, if you want to, what you should do is give dramatic irony for something like this, where you see Fallon Henley getting a little, like, just you see the gears turning in her head whenever you're doing establishing shots of her during the match.
Yeah.
And then after the match, you have her attack Thea Hale.
They kind of set this up, I think, 2 weeks ago when they were tag teaming together, or it was a six woman or something. And Thea got the key lock on and got the submission. And they're holding up everybody's hands, and you just see kind of Fallon just kind of slow burning. But yeah, they didn't do enough for me.
They didn't.
NXT Underground Natty was friggin' awesome in this match. And it shocked me in some ways. I don't deny that Natty's a great wrestler, or she's very good, but I've never considered her great. The storytelling in it left a little bit to be desired in terms of, you know, hey, you're in a pit fight. Let's not leave to go help your friend out in the audience getting choked out by Shayna. You know, let's finish the fight first in some ways. But for doing a worked blood sport match, I think for her first time, I thought she was pretty great in this.
Yeah, I thought.
With Lola, especially.
Yeah, like this match delivered, which is not to say that I like loved it, but I thought it got there. It was good enough to pass, and which I had my doubts about going into this, and I didn't even necessarily think the storytelling, like the training storytelling, could have actually been kind of good. But if anything, the way they were doing the setup to this match, it was going to be like Lola was going to lose because she failed to scout Natty's submissions. That was the story that it felt like they were leading into. So it was a little weird, though correct, when Lola Vice actually ended up prevailing and winning the match.
I have no other notes.
I have no other notes either. We've done our preview here. Raw was perfectly watchable.
It was watchable, but there's nothing to this draft. They don't have any fun in it. And we've talked about that for the last 3 or 4 years, where it's like they really don't go hard into the draft thing. It's just we're picking people and they're just they don't even need this stuff because they don't go into the world of the draft. So just announce the rosters and let's go get on with it.
No, but, you know, I think that you are still getting quality TV matches,
yes,
like
yes.
A Xavier Woods versus Gunther. You know Gunther's going to win, but Woods is a great TV opponent for him. Sami Zayn, Bronson Reed, I kind of feel the same way.
Yes.
Like really great television opponent for him, and it results in some really entertaining
matches.
That's
been built. I mean, they built these mid-card feuds to get to these types of matches too. So I mean, you get rewarded for that. That's kind of all I want, as opposed to people telling me the story that they're trying to tell in AEW. That's the thing that drives me nuts. Like,
and last, I'm still not entirely sold on her, but Liv Morgan's getting there.
Yeah,
like she's feeling more like a top level character, and everything, like it is starting to come together a bit.
She is more comfortable on the microphone as a heel than a babyface.
I agree. I think every one of the things that is very true about this company writ large is everyone's just more comfortable being a character now.
Yeah.
In this company, like, you're encouraged to be a character, and now it's a little bit more hands off for you to discover how to be that character, like a Drew McIntyre. Drew McIntyre feels very much like the byproduct of them taking the reins off a little bit and letting this guy breathe and go, like, all right, you're working with CM Punk. How would you react to all of this? And he's actually reacting in a very organic sort of way.
And they're, you know what they're doing to dismantle the heel character is they're deconstructing him very well. Like Sheamus coming in and just basically telling him the truth about, look, you didn't need to go attack a one-armed guy. You got your butt kicked by a one-armed guy because you're so angry. I mean, he's telling him the truth. And
right.
He's not getting all that. He's not liking it at all.
No. And I think the Sheamus and Drew dynamic, I mean, yes, we all see where this is going, right? But I really like this character dynamic because it's very true to life. Like,
yes.
when you have a person like this, like Drew McIntyre is essentially like a narcissist type of personality on overdrive right now.
He's Ahab with the white whale.
Yeah, he's Ahab with the white whale, but also there's this like NPD sort of like, I am a victim,
yes,
of everything. Everything's,
yes,
a conspiracy against me, not actually taking any ownership for any of his problems, which is a hallmark of like an NPD sort of thing. And you have Sheamus coming in there as the concerned friend who does not realize what he is dealing with in this personality type. And so what he thinks is that, because you would think for like a normal person who's a little bit better adjusted, a little bit of a dose of loving truth would help maybe set their head right. But when someone's deep on like an NPD thing, like on a narcissist kick, they are going to instead recoil super hard against that and lash out against the person who's trying to tell them the loving truth, that like the call is coming from inside the house, homie. So with Drew when he's engaging with Sheamus. He's hearing all of these things, and Sheamus could, and he doesn't because he's like the Sheamus character, he could word them in the most artful way possible, in the most nuanced and loving way possible. And even Drew's going to have that immediate recoil effect of, no, what I hate more than anything, to kind of quote Oscar Wilde's introduction to the portrait of Dorian Gray here,
ooh,
is the face of Caliban seeing himself in the glass. Like, Drew McIntyre and the narcissist does not like the mirror held up to themselves, because that's the first time that they see themselves as the monster.
I love the portrait. Is it Portrait of Dorian Gray or Picture
Portrait,
of Dorian Gray?
Portrait of Dorian Gray.
I always get those two. I think they called the
or
movie,
no, or, I think maybe,
the, movie the picture. Of
maybe Dorian it Gray. Is the Picture of Dorian Gray. I might be wrong on that.
I don't know, but it's one of my favorite stories and favorite books. I absolutely
oh, yeah, no, it's a great book. And yeah, Wilde's introduction to the Picture of Dorian Gray is very
it's a picture of Dorian Gray. Okay.
Yeah, it's a short intro. It's like maybe two or three pages, but it does a very nice job sort of setting up what he's trying to explore in the Picture of Dorian Gray, and even as a standalone treatise sort of stands on its own.
Okay, there's your culture for the week, kids.
No, but yes, again, the just more flowers at the character of Drew McIntyre right now. I think he is a very complete, rational, although unsympathetic character, who is self-justifying in a way that you can feel the internal logic, but also like completely reject it. And it just. WWE has more fun characters to hate than AEW does right now.
There is no hate in AEW.
Right.
I mentioned that last week.
I don't hate the Bucks. Trent. They're annoying.
Yes.
Like, I don't, and Trent is not important enough for me to hate.
Maybe Jericho, but then Jericho's just kind of, you know.
But it's like schmarmy and wink-winky, and like also he's not really doing stuff that heats things up. Like Drew McIntyre, it does
Drew is Ole Anderson going and his hatred of Dusty. That's what he is, really. I mean, it's the same with Drew hating CM Punk is Ole saying, I'm going to put CM Punk putting Dusty out of wrestling by the end of 1985. You know, that's what that is. And it's so compelling to see a guy whose anger is absolutely self-destructing him in all his relationships.
Right? Yeah, it's all subsuming. And yeah, again, just that he is processing a series of events that he does understand. Like, he has a sense of past, but as people who are, frankly, bad people do, they twist the narrative of their past to be a victim narrative wherein they were constantly on the screw job end. They never did nothing to hurt themselves. They have no ownership really over any of these things. He's just a very compelling character to me right now.
I love that we got some Oscar Wilde on this show. This has been Shake Them Ropes. You can follow me at CrapGame13 on Twitter. I won't call it X. You can follow the show at Shake Them Ropes on Twitter. I just update that when new episodes come out. Chris is only on Instagram at @DOCTOR_NOV. If you like the show, please once again go to the Red Circle link in the Air podcast, or just go to redcircle.com, look up Shake Them Ropes. Throw a buck or two in there for the tip jar for us. We are part of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network, Flagship, 5-Star Match Game, Music of the Mat, Good Bad Hungy, Days of Thunder, all sorts of podcasts for all your various wrestling loves. I am also on the Fight Game Media Network doing the Dynamite Show. We go live 20 minutes if it's a 3-hour show after Rampage, if it's just the 2-hour show after Dynamite. Live on YouTube, it's usually myself and Paul Fontaine. This week I did it with Keela Cash, who hosts the Rap over there, and also the audio drops on your podcatchers the next morning. So that's the Dynamite Show and Fight Game Media Network. Chris also would like to plug some things.
Yeah, by all means, if you're interested in guitar lessons, please hit me up. Now that my ears are healed, I'm definitely back at a point where I can teach on a regular basis. So follow me on Instagram if you are so inclined. Other than that, you can follow me on Instagram and see me post occasional guitar videos and that sort of thing. And other than that, I just want to encourage everyone to keep reaching for the stars.
Hello. Do you like New Japan Pro Wrestling? Are you a Shin Nihon freak? If so, check out the Super J-Cast with Joel and Damon on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
And even if you fucking hate New Japan Pro Wrestling, listen to the Super J-Cast anyway. Not just for our great show reviews, analysis, and pastrami sandwiches, but there's also usually some dick jokes somewhere in the obligatory opening 30 minutes of absolute nonsense we chat about every single week. That's the Super J-Cast for all the best talk about New Japan Pro Wrestling, crisps, and pornography.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.